Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
The following is a presentation of the Force Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Force Center podcast feed, and this episode is Questions of the Force, Quantum Mania of the Force. That's right. We are changing it up. We're now a Marvel podcast. Just kidding. We like Marvel, but we're talking about questions about Star Wars. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
I'm Ken Napsack. I occasionally would love to talk about some other things with you. We'll look at that down the line. There you go.
Exactly. And I just got my tickets to see that Quantum Mania movie. Is somebody who owned a Secret Wars action figure of Kang in the 1980s. I'm extremely excited to see that film. Anyway, back to Star Wars. And you know what people think of when they think of Star Wars, Ken? Audible. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/forcecenter. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. We are continuing to recommend Path to Deceit by Tessa Gratton and Justina Ireland. It is a High Republic adventure we are looking forward to digging into. So if you want to download a free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/forcecenter. Again, that's audibletrial.com/forcecenter for a free audiobook. We have had some kind fans, some listeners asking us, hey, are there other ways that we can help you, help the podcast grow? This is a great way to help us that costs nothing. You get a free audiobook and it's a good deal. It really does make a difference for us. So if you're at all interested, do check it out.
Yeah, that's a direct way to respond to that question, Joseph. And yes, it absolutely helps us out.
It does. And we are still on an epic journey, Ken, to a certain number at a certain place. Do you want to tell people about that?
Yeah, over on YouTube, we are having some fun. We got some great things planned. Figure Fights dropping February 1st. Actually, when are we releasing this episode? Hey, it dropped yesterday. Did you enjoy it? Hey, we're in a quantum of time. What are we? Quantum solace? we're having a lot of fun over on YouTube there. More things coming. More episodes of Figure Fights, essays, shorts, a lot of things we're working on. Ideas we haven't even come up with yet. So join the party by subscribing over there on YouTube. We're trying to get up to 7,000 subscribers. That's our next step in the growth of that channel. So we appreciate if you already have, and if you're considering or you're just discovering us, go ahead and subscribe to that YouTube channel.
Yes, do it, as Palpatine would say, do it. Thursday, February 2nd, reaching back into the past is when Figure Fights debuted. But we're going to move on to the actual titular cues, the questions. We've got two from Twitter, two from our patrons on Patreon. We go first to Twitter. This comes to us from Tim Scudder. Tim says, not so much a question as a request. Would love to hear you talk about two literally related things. Omega as the daughter of Jango Fett, and Boba as a brother to the clones. Oh, this is a great one. I have been in enough panels at conventions where there's a Q&A time, and often the phrase, this isn't really a question, is a moment of terror, because then an audience member will just say an opinion is a fact, and sometimes maybe a disturbing one. What a delight that this was the complete opposite. When Tim asked not so much a question as a request, we got a great request, a great topic to discuss here, Ken. So where do you go first with this?
Can I tell you where I actually go first? So Tim Scudder, I have not heard that last name Scudder in a long time. One of our more popular teachers at my elementary school in Rio Grande, California was a Mr. Scudder. So, Tim, you already started with some good vibes, because I remember Mr. Scudder, and Mr. Scudder here has got a great question here. I kind of love that it's overlooked, meaning to me maybe that's not even a fact. I think it's sometimes overlooked. It's not part of a lot of discussions week to week on Bad Batch, not just on us, but just out there. But it hangs over things, right? Mm-hmm. The big answers are still out there. You sometimes I do look at Omega and just go, oh, yeah. What's that going to be like when she then finds out, discusses it, realizes it, when Boba finds out? How would that affect Boba Fett? This is a kid who is looking for family. This is an adult who's looking for family. And discovering this information, what happens when he's young and he's like, wait, I have a sister, or when he's older? Like Book of Boba Fett season 2. Wait a minute, I had a sister. I'm fascinated with all that. And it could be a lesson in environment. Boba sort of raised by wolves on the way out in the galaxy and himself, whereas Omega had a very sheltered experiment because she was an experiment, and so to speak, and how they emerged differently and who influenced them as they got out in the world. I think I start there in terms of just the overall question.
Yeah, no, I think we are playing in similar fields of thought, which I think makes sense because it's what the show is playing with, of the relationships of family, and how do you define family, particularly when you are aware that, well, I was created in this kind of scientific way and I was created for this specific purpose, but I am an individual and I get to choose who I'm going to be. That's what defines a clone, according to Cody. So then having them go, well, we know we have these connections that we can assign sort of traditional familial ideas to. Do we decide to do that or not, and how and when and why? All these things are what make the clones such interesting characters. This is not directly Tim Scudder, perhaps your former teacher, Mr. Scudder, giving you an essay assignment way in the future. We'll get to the direct things of the Omega as daughter of Jango and Boba as brother in the clones, because those are specific relationships that that Tim is interested in. But I want to start from the young Boba Fett perspective. I continue to really want to see him in Bad Batch. There were the planned arcs in the Clone Wars that kind of took him fully into putting on the helmet and becoming the Boba Fett we know. I think I'm really interested in seeing that story for Boba Fett, and also because I think it relates to the Bad Batch. It would be just fun to see him put the armor on. Bad Batch, we've often described as one of its facets is a tour of the galaxy. Just the Empire takes over, right? And Boba Fett, at least at the beginning of that time, is someone who prospers from the horror of the Empire. he goes on to regret it, doubt it, reject it, right? Mm-hmm. But at least at the beginning, right, that's a great contrast for him to look around the galaxy. Omega sees that, oh, a lot of people in the galaxy need help. They need family. They need community. They need joy. And Boba looks around the galaxy and goes, nah, it's a wolf eat wolf. It's a loath wolf eat loath wolf galaxy. You got to be out for yourself. Anybody else is a sucker. I'm putting on this armor and I'm going to have that perspective validated and I'm going to become infamous and wealthy off that life perspective. That to me makes sense of why Boba Fett would fit into this storytelling era of Bad Batch. And, mm-hmm. and in particular with this sibling relationship between Omega and Boba, right? I think Omega would be thrilled to, you know, maybe know more about this brother, right? And want that family and that connection. Really seeing as Boba as a brother, maybe reaching out to him. I kind of assume from the Boba Fett television show that he has marched through life without ever really truly finding connection, family, and the Tuskens is really the first time that he feels it, right?
Yeah.
So in my headcanon right now, it kind of makes sense that they don't super connect, right? So did they, you know, does Boba kind of want that connection, but Omega ends up sort of rejecting him based on his anger, his violence, his cold view of the galaxy, and it just kind of is another nail in the coffin of his attitude at this time in life. I think there could be some really interesting storytelling there.
I think that's, yeah, exactly where I would go to. Just this headcanon meeting, you know, Pacino and De Niro and heat across the table type of thing. I made that reference before and other things, but like her, it's not just light side, dark side of the same genes there, but what that would do to Boba Fett. And I gotta wonder, and perhaps think that it would drive him further at this point in his life, because it'd be so painful to realize that connection was there and it was taken from me. I you know, from day one, you know, or day two, whenever Omega was, you know, created, my father didn't have a chance to tell me or didn't tell me. I didn't know. Tonway didn't tell me. Like, I think it would drive him further into, what he would be. And I don't think it would have to be a long exchange. I think he'd just be, he's so angry at the time that we see him in the Clone Wars. Understandably so from a lot of points of view, which is why I love him in the Clone Wars. But that's where I go with it, where I love how you phrased it as Omega would kind of reject him. I think that would be part of it as well. Of her just like, you know, you're pretty angry. again, understand. But her saying, but we could be this, you can do this, we could choose this, and why not help? Because everything about her along the way is helping, right? She's always turned around to see who's behind her and who she can run back to and help. That's part of what you see, especially in this season so far. I love this conversation that they might have and what it would do to Boba Fett.
Yeah. I think it is one of those, not light side, dark side is in the Force, but more light side, dark side is this sort of analogy for real life. The what's in the cave tree on Dagobah, only what you take with you, right? You know, you can be presented with something and you can react in an angry and a fearful way, or you can try to take a deep breath and see the positives of it. Right. Not lie to yourself, but see the legitimate positives of it, right? So it'd be a really interesting presentation to Boba of like, you can have family, you can have connection, you can have someone who maybe understands your unique life experience in some ways. Or he could see Omega as like a threat, right? Not physically, but like emotionally, of like, he's special, right? He's the unaltered clone, right? Mm. And like, he's Django's only son, and is like, who's this pretender, you know?
Yeah.
Who never knew my father, wasn't raised by my father, but is, you know, trying to tell me she's my sister. She's not Django's daughter, you know.
Yeah.
He could react to it in anger and that fear of what makes him unique being taken away.
Yeah, just, yeah, I love the rejection of hers. That ain't your dad.
Because ain't your daddy.
He does have such a connection. I love the stuff in the Mandalorian about his father. I loved hearing that acknowledged and dealt with, and especially Book of Boba Fett. And for her to, you don't get the sense that she hung out with Django a lot on Kamino.
No. And maybe there's some canon detail that I am not remembering from season one, but I think it's kind of up for grabs. I think what's different about Omega is she's aware of the science of it all, right? She spends time with it, right? She basically lives in the lab, right? So I think she probably has a different relationship with that idea, which, you know, getting to Tim's specific questions about Boba as a brother to the clones, I think a vital thing about this conversation that I'm sure some listeners are like, say it already. Boba's not big on clones, right? He's got a bad attitude toward clones. They are cheap, altered copies, and he's the genuine article, right? That's his attitude. So I kind of can't imagine Boba having a great attitude toward the Bad Batch and seeing them as brothers at this point in his life. What do you think?
I agree with that, Ed. And that's just some stuff that's in the text in the Clone Wars, indeed. And again, a situation of not just jealousy, but just like a not understanding why, you know, I can't have that. So therefore, I'm going to be even more independent, more behind a wall, more broken off from this gang and resent that they would even consider themselves brothers or consider themselves a brother to me. You're right. Not just about the technicality of, yeah, you have my genes, but you ain't me. You're a copy. That's one part of it too. But I think it's because of the Book of Boba Fett, you know, there's a wide, you know, ocean of emotions going on in Boba Fett where I just keep going to this. He is truly hurt. He's always been hurt from, I don't know, 10, 11, 12 on. Time we pick up with him and attack the clones, and so he would just be hurt about this gang of you're calling yourselves brothers of me. Number one, wrong, and two, look how much fun you're having. I can't allow that. I can't have that. So therefore, I am more determined to be the lone wolf here.
Yeah, I think so. I can see the Bad Batch, you know, trying to extend a hand of friendship. Right? They have. They're trying to be kind to clones, right? They give them the benefit of the doubt. They use their stun settings on clones, you know. Yeah. They keep giving Crosshair another chance. I think they might see Boba as a brother, and I think, and reach a handout, and I think Boba would slap it away at this point in his life.
Yeah, exactly. Literally. Correct. Yeah.
Directly. Slapping Tech's hand in Tech and go, ow, that was a PSI of Muffin. Omega as the daughter of Jango Fett. How do you think Omega might feel about that? How do you think Boba might feel about that? What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, again, like Boba would reject it, but Omega, it's not unlike some of the Rey stuff we've dealt with in Rise of Skywalker. What you're from doesn't necessarily have to be who you are, and I wonder if she would have that chance. I wonder how much she knew. I, we don't have this answer yet. You know, Jango asked for Boba. Did he ask for Omega? Does he know about Omega? Did they tell him and he said, no, thanks. I got a mission on Coruscant. I'll see you later. Like what was that about? And so therefore that might color how she views it there. And I just can't imagine. I think there'd be a little bit of pain and stuff to work with on her side once she comes to, you know, terms with it, of who I am, of and my father, or who I'm from, I guess, you know, is this ruthless bounty hunter that did ruthless things. That's not me, and I don't want to be that. And I think she'd have to figure that out and as she's figuring that on her own with the badge.
Yeah, no, I really agree with you. I mean, the way I take the Omega story that we've got so far is that, yes, Jango asked for Boba. He was a part of the price of doing it, of a son, and he raised him like a son. I think there's every possibility Jango doesn't know about Omega, because Omega seems more like the clones going or the Kaminoans deciding we're going to keep seeing what else we can make happen with this DNA. A different experiment. So I think there's a possibility that Jango is not really aware of her. It's definitely a part of Omega's story that she was kept isolated and alone. Right. Yeah. So she could know about she could maybe have like the DNA strands of Jango Fett memorized. Maybe she's got a fact sheet, you know, but I don't think she knows him.
No.
So I think that would be really interesting for her to say, like, yeah, I don't know if I ever thought of him as my dad, but he raised you, Boba. What was he like? What was he really like? I want to know where I came from. And then I think it could be a story of, oh yeah, this brutal bounty hunter, I don't need him to be my dad. You know, my dad who's gone, you know, but I don't need to hold him in my heart as my dad. I've got four perfectly good dads.
Yeah. Dads, uncles, brothers in a way too from, yeah, I think a lot there. Mm-hmm. It's so funny too, because this is a great question. Again, Mr. Scudder, great question. But I just, when you hear Filoni, some other folks, story group people, hey, what Star Wars is about? You hear, oh, it's about family a lot. Carrie Fisher did that and said that in an interview. Star Wars is about family. And you and I agree with that. We also think hope and fear, hope versus fear, all that kind of stuff. This is why I love having these kind of discussions, because it isn't just a stat sheet. It is like, it's about family. And Omega's got some choices in front of her about who she is and what she connects with. Boba Fett's got some big issues with family or lack thereof. So I love that these things come up in this conversation.
Yeah, it goes back to the original trilogy of Luke wanting to be a Jedi like his father and living with this idea of who his father was and then having to wrestle with the reality. And
yeah,
it could be a similar journey with Omega in Django. he was nice. He helped people, right? your money.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is a lot of things they're wrestling with now of who they want to be. So, yeah, great thought starter, Mr. Tim Scudder. Thank you very much. Any final thoughts, Ken?
No, other than, you know, I do think we are going to figure some of this stuff out down the line, and I can't wait till we get there.
Yeah, definitely a lot of headcanon spewing out of our heads there, but we will keep our minds and emotions and arms literally physically open for whatever storytelling the Bad Batch might have about Boba and Jango in the future. With that, we are going to move on to our next question from Commander Cloud. This is a straightforward question, in that it's a question. And also, as far as questions go, it's very straightforward. Mm-hmm. Commander Cloud asks, what sort of tasty treats would you bring in your Dagobah snack pack? he had included a great picture of Luke opening up his ration kit there on Dagobah. And he's the stick that he seems not too excited about. So, Ken, where do you go? What's in your Dagobah snack pack?
No surprise to anyone who's heard me talking into microphones for years, or especially if you hang out with me on Twitch streams, where within 5 minutes, usually every stream goes into a food conversation. I enjoy snack packs. No surprise there. From school lunches when Mr. Scudder was in the cafeteria watching over all of us to now. I am a sucker for things that are quick and easy to eat. So I have a wonderful answer. I am going to take, I love Uncrustables, which are the peanut butter and jelly sandwiches that you put in the fridge and then you thaw out and you eat. It is not a concept for everyone. I love them. Give me a meat on stick. Even though I try to maintain a mostly vegan lifestyle, I do enjoy these new things I've discovered, turkey sticks. So it's like a Slim Jim, but it's kind of healthier turkey. Kind of is the key word. So that goes in there. Little carrots with dipping dressings, you know, those little packs. Oh, I've been a fan of those my entire life. Oh, when my mom would slip those in my lunch bag, I was so excited. I got carrots and ranch dressing. Yippee skippy. Then you need a dessert. Yeah, and Uncrustables are not the dessert kits. Chocolate covered dips, the granola bars dipped in chocolate, because why even pretend to be healthy with that? And then wash it all down. What I just finished, I muted my mic to throw the can away, a V8 Hydrate or a V8 Energy drink. Not the classic V8 tomato juice cans. I never liked those, but they have a fruit juice flavored energy drinks that I love. So that is my snack pack. And you can hear the glee in my voice because I want to get stranded on Dagobah with this food.
Yeah, absolutely. Man, that sounds delicious and I think more healthy than mine. Yeah, I gotta add some more vegetables to mine. Now, if Star Wars can make like Rey's portion bread.
Yeah.
If you could, it would probably be hard to make a whole frozen pizza. But if you could have like a frozen calzone. You just put some water on it and it explodes into a full, you know, cheese and pepperoni a hot pocket, basically. Yeah, I want a hot pocket. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, that would be amazing. Failing that, if they have the little sort of the little ration sticks, the space breadstick looking thing that Luke eats in Empire Strikes Back, I'd be happy with that if it was gourmet cheese flavored. Now, I want my Dagobah snack pack to have been packed on Naboo, because of every planet we've ever been to, I bet Naboo makes really good cheese, right? They've got good laws to make sure that the animals are well taken care of. I bet there's the any sort of machinery process is vetted to be high quality. It's artisan. I'm sure there are cheese artists on Naboo. So these cheese flavored sticks, right? I'm not talking about the Kraft cheese flavored sticks. I'm talking about gourmet Naboo artist cheese sticks.
Oh, come to Force Center for the Nubian cheese talk.
Nubian cheese, this one.
Yes.
I guess I'm sticking with Naboo because, look, on a practical side, you know, I would want some sort of meat. So, you know, something that's going to last. So, like, salami. I've brought salami to conventions sometimes because it's a good, like, that could survive anything, yeah. Right? And still be basically edible. So I want some shock salami, the butt cows on Naboo, shock salami. And then for my dessert, Ken, I was inspired by a recent treat at Disneyland. Just like Ray has a portion bread, I think you should be able to make a portion churro. You need a different sort of pan, but it would fit in the snack pack because it's long and thin, like my Nubian cheese sticks.
Yeah,
but I had a churro that was available in Tomorrowland in particular, where they had this, I'm sure not even remotely healthy, having nothing to do with reality, a sour cherry dust that they rolled it in. Yeah. And the sour cherry churro was deeply unnatural and very delicious.
Yeah. Oh, man. I got to get back for that. First of all, I love that. You understood the assignment a little bit more. You went into the galaxy for your answers. I went to Ralph's for my answers. Or Kroger's if you're on the coast.
You know there's a Ralph's on Corellia.
Yes.
That's the planet that has a Ralph's. And so probably somebody named Ralph.
This is what I want in Andor. We're talking about the dirt and gritty, realistic view of Star Wars that everyone loves. I want, you know, Perrin having to go to the grocery store, pick up food for the dinner party. I know he'd send his... you know, his servants essentially the way they got his house. But I want, that's the realism. I want the Coruscant grocery store to be dealt with.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I do need something to drink. So, I mean, hey, water, that's fine. But also if there could be some dehydrated martini that you could add water to, I just want to add water to everything.
It's a good strategy.
And then I realized I made a deeply unhealthy meal. I'm not going to be in fighting shape when I go to the tree cave. The only things in there are what you take with you. And for me, it would be like an upset stomach by the time I'm eating my salami and sour cherry churro. So I would need some like daily supplement vitamin pills, or whatever those are in Star Wars.
Yeah. I just wouldn't want like that, whatever that nutrient paste the stormtroopers drink or whatever. That's disturbing. So yeah, I'm going more your direction. The sliced shack pepperoni or salami is great.
Yeah, remember when we were kids and the Flintstones? I think were they aspirin or were they vitamin? What were they? But they were like, hey, suddenly now medicine's fun because they taste like ash and strawberry and they look like Fred Flintstone.
Yeah, that was a great moment in history.
I need that. I need vitamin pills that, you know, of Darth Vader's head, ironically.
I used to get in a fight with my old roommate about that. He, you know, when they started doing the gummy forms of medicine, he's like, what is this, candy? And I'm like, yeah, what's the problem with that? I want my vitamins in candy form. It works.
You don't want candy that makes you feel better? Come on. Yeah,
come on.
Well, this is a fun one, and I love that snack pack, and I love that we get to see rations in other parts of Star Wars, and a fun thing to explore. Thank you, Commander Cloud. Ken, any final thoughts, or are you getting too hungry?
I'm going to head to a store after the recording and pick up these items. My snack pack can be had here on Earth, so here we go.
Yeah, no, I'm ready to finish this episode so I can eat lunch. So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with more Questions of the Force.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms.
Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
And we are back for more Cues of the Force. We have talked some questions from Twitter, and now we're going to talk some questions from our patrons on Patreon. We go first to Brian Diller. Brian says, "Hi, Ken and Joseph. Sending my annual question as I start my 8th rewatch of Rebels. Rebels is my crab legs or filet mignon of the Star Wars buffet. Nice. Just watch the episode where Kanan and Ezra visit the Jedi Temple and both end up communicating with Yoda. It got me thinking. How do you think Yoda is communicating with them? Is he opening himself to the Force, therefore jeopardizing his possible whereabouts to Palpatine? Does he get a Ring doorbell notification anytime someone enters a temple? Did he pre-record every possible interaction he thought he might have? How does he drop a kyber crystal out of thin air? Or do we just say, hey, it's the Force, stop asking so many questions?" I think this is an absolutely great question and a great celebration of Rebels. Ken, let's get into this. How recently have you rewatched this episode? Is this one that lingers in your mind?
It lingers in my mind. However, the way my mind works, I rewatched it this morning, the day of our recording. Entire episode, actually. With an English muffin, not a snack pack.
And I love that I didn't mean to do it, but our food conversation continued. Brian embracing the Star Wars buffet analogy we make, that there's a lot of different parts of Star Wars. You can choose what to enjoy. And Brian is calling Rebels his crab legs and filet mignon and once again, making me hungry. So let's get into this. Ken, I want to start with this part of it because it's a thing in Star Wars that comes up a lot and I think has had kind of vaguely different answers over different years of book legends back in the day to canon to assumptions that you make based on what Star Wars you want. How do you feel like if Yoda is meditating, reaching out, do you think that it is a matter of risk of him being discovered by Palpatine?
Yeah, I will say yeah. And I think I absolutely take your point on just it's a collection of information bit over the years, right? From a lot of different sources that might make you think a certain thing. I don't think it's automatic. I don't think an alarm goes off, right? There's no woogle, woogle, woogle in Palpatine's office. Oh, someone's using the Force. I don't necessarily think it's that. But I'd like to think, not just for stakes in the story, but just I think there's some, hey, you can feel it. You know, you got to be careful. But it's not as cut and dry as maybe I would have thought, I don't know, 5-10 years ago.
Yeah, yeah, no, I agree. And I realize I cut off a part of Brian's question. So Brian is talking about how exactly what we're talking about, how Yoda is communicating. And Brian says, I think he opens himself to the Force when duty calls. He understands the bigger picture and who is needed at what times and understands it's a risk he needs to take. So that was Brian's take on what we're talking about, to follow up with Brian's great question and thought starter here. I think as Star Wars has developed, I feel like some of it is I could point to this little bit or that little bit, but a lot of it is just kind of headcanon. I feel like, Vader doesn't sense Kenobi still existing, right? He, in the Kenobi show, it's when Obi-Wan reaches out to him, like Obi-Wan needs to know that Anakin is still alive and reaches out to find him, right? Mm-hmm. And they connect, right? And Vader's eyes open up. And I think that there's a lot of that that's about connection, right? I think that happens between people who are deeply connected, right? I think, I don't know. I think in the original trilogy era, we kind of grew up with that, like, oh, if anybody's using the Force, they one another might be able to sense it, right? And I think if Mace Windu is on one side of the galaxy and Ki-Adi Mundi has like gas pains, Mace isn't like, oh no, right? Oh, no. It has to be something major, and I think the connections grow stronger as the people grow more connected, right? So all that is to say, from my headcanon, I think Yoda is constantly meditating, constantly reaching out into the galaxy, constantly checking in on people who are using the Force, looking into the future for all the different paths and the things that might be and who might need help and when Yoda can and can't reach them. And I kind of think Yoda can do all of that without exposing himself to Palpatine. I think he would have to be like looking for Palpatine, or I think he could sense dark energies looking for him and Yoda could pull his energy back. But I think he is free to meditate and look without automatically being at risk.
Yeah, I like that view on it because of where we're at now, where you and I have discussed this too, where it's like, when you grow up, again, looking at it from the 80s child generation perspective, it's like Yoda, Obi-Wan, and Luke, and that's it, right? And Vader, of course. And there ain't nobody else, right? That's kind of the feel. The Empire wiped them all out. And now that we know, hey, that's only 19 years. That's not exactly true. Now there's characters in cartoons, video games, books, and more. And more emerging, more returning, more out there. And I've grown to really love that. I did struggle with it at the beginning. I still sometimes want to make sure we don't have an entire list of 10 Jedis that could turn the tide of the war if they just were there in the Galactic Civil War. I do like Luke being the continuation of Anakin as the Chosen One and being involved with all that. But that said, it just makes more sense that Yoda's doing what you're saying, where he is connecting, feeling, just connecting to the Force. And what is the Force telling me? And who's out there? And what's going on? And that unless it is direct, unless Palpatine, I know he's obsessed with things, but how obsessed is he sitting there in his office going, is my little green friend still out there? Let me try to find him. He might be. Yeah. He's obsessed with those kind of things, but I don't think he does that necessarily.
Yeah, and I know there's stuff in Rebels where, the Inquisitors are more aware of the temple once it's been open and all that kind of thing. It's a risk of sensing them. But I think that's also like the Inquisitors are being portrayed as like they have Kanan and Ezra's scent. They're on them, right? Yeah. They know of them and they're on them. So I think that is also like a real focusing on.
I agree with that.
I also think that there is, in the original trilogy, this sort of evidence that Yoda can reach out and watch and stay in touch because he's got the line in Empire Strikes Back about Luke. This one, a long time have I watched, and I always took that as, through the Force, closing his eyes and watching Skywalker TV in his Force mind. Right. I don't think that's letters from Obi-Wan. Right. Yeah. I think it's looking into the soul of Luke, looking into who he is, what he wants. All the paths that he could follow.
I love Obi-Wan texting and emailing Yoda footage. He can't download it. It's not a .mov file. He doesn't know what that can. I have an old computer. What have you sent me, Luke? But what you've said there, I'm nodding and saying, mm-hmm, because I find often, even when I sometimes question some of the, again, there's more Jedi in the galaxy, or how's Yoda connecting? That a lot of it is in the films. A lot of it is in not just Lucas's vision, but just like, this is a line. And you can pull a lot of story from that line of long have I watched. Well, what does that mean? What does that actually mean? Yoda on that cave. We know he's in that cave. Maybe he takes a little vacation like Kenobi does off Tatooine, as we learn later on. That could still be in the story. But at the end of the day, Yoda's sitting there watching Luke somehow, some way. And I think this is the way.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think we're kind of, from the Yoda perspective of what is he doing and why, I think we're both in agreement of Brian's take here that Yoda is opening himself to the Force when duty calls, understands the bigger picture and who is needed at what times, and understands the risk he needs to take. I think, you know, he's got that last line to Ezra of, you know, a Jedi you may yet be. Mm-hmm. So I think he is seeing these paths for Ezra, possibly. I got more thoughts on that, but I want to hear your reaction and your thought to what's going on in that episode. Where does that kyber crystal come from? What role does the temple play in it, if any? What are your thoughts?
Well, I think this is a wonderful question, Brian, because how I often watch Star Wars is I go, oh, great, Yoda spoke to them, and I go back to my snack pack. I just, that's the world I live in. And I think this forces me to really slow down and look at it. Yoda has a great quote in this episode. Be not concerned with how. No, I am here because you are here. And I think that goes to some, that's also a little bit of, I'm teasing Brian here, but a little bit of like, don't worry about it. But also explains there's a little bit of, not magic behind it, but just some force, some things we don't fully understand. And the need is there. So Yoda is there, which I think to your question about the temple. Yeah, I think it absolutely have to do with something with the temple. The temple being the source of a lot of force energy, being activated, so to speak, and Yoda feeling that, needing it. And, you know, Ezra doesn't know who Yoda is, but Yoda's connecting here. Kanan does, and Yoda's connecting with now Kanan, formerly Caleb. And I definitely think that all factors into it. I also think that Yoda's using a little bit of the cosmic force to connect. We got those lights, a lot of things that are similar to the Clone Wars Season 6 stuff with him. Mm-hmm. Which also might mean it's a path Palpatine cannot access at all, because Palpatine has some of those problems, right? Dark side users don't have a lot of connection to the cosmic force. So maybe that has something to do with it too.
Yeah, no, I love everything you're saying. In terms of the how, I think it is really interesting to think about that Jedi Temple is sitting on top of the world between worlds. It's a vergence, right? It has a unique power. And I think a lot of Jedi Temples are like that. But I think that might be a place where Yoda can connect even more strongly. Mm-hmm. I think maybe it is a version of, projecting himself. There is the storyline in Rebels where when next Ezra talks with Yoda, he can see Yoda. And there's a comment about how Ezra is progressing. So I really do take it as like, this isn't a vision that Ezra's having and Yoda is the manifestation of it. I really take it as the...
Yeah,
this is Yoda making a long distance force call by whatever mystical means that you might imagine. This is truly Yoda sharing his perspective, talking with Ezra and Kanan. For the Kyber, I think it is totally open for interpretation. I think that Kyber could be in the temple and already physically, and Yoda is presenting it to him. I also think there's this possibility that when Ezra is presented with the temple or with the Kyber, the temple shifted, right? And he's just sort of standing on this mystical ethereal disc, and there's just a starscape around him. And even earlier, there are these sort of symbols that are very world between worlds. I think it is a possibility that there is an element of the energy of world between worlds that Yoda is moving the Kyber crystal from somewhere and presenting it to Ezra.
I love that as a possibility. I like that. I don't necessarily have a direct clear answer here. There's a lot of options. First of all, Yoda is speaking to two people at the same time. So there's some other dimensional stuff at play there that maybe I don't really understand. The idea of the Kyber crystal being there is interesting to me, because maybe that you could, there's even this, you know, Ezra's kind of like, what do you mean this temple was here and this planet I was here the whole time? Like, it was like, I used to play on this hill or something, you know, like, and the fact that it was in a way, all of this was kind of calling to him. So that reminds me a lot of the Ilum gathering stuff anyways, right? Where you got to kind of find the crystal and the crystal calls to you, that kind of stuff. So maybe it was always there. He just couldn't see it. But to your world between worlds stuff, I love that. I absolutely think they were building towards that. I also see the Kyber crystal, Yoda being able to produce it here, just one step away of learning how to burn down trees with lightning from Force Ghost. Mm-hmm. And also, slightly cheating here, I even dug up the Rebels Recon episode about this, which was a fun blast from the past. Andy Gutierrez hosting the show, talking to Pablo Hidalgo in the cafeteria at Lucasfilm. And there was no great insights into some of the hows and whys here, but there's a wonderful quote from Filoni where he's just like, I'm not going to give you all, we're building towards something. So back off, Andy. And I think that has to do with what you're talking about. I'm just like, yeah, there's something bigger at play here that these characters don't fully understand at this point. And we didn't at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. This was one of the most fun episodes to rewatch because you're watching in the flow. I was in a different headspace back then. I was happy to hear Yoda, but you know, I wasn't as emotionally connected to Ezra and Kanan yet. I'm watching it, you know, 1 week at a time with commercials for Go-Gurt in between, as we always joke about, you know. Yeah. And to watch it again and see how it fits into the story of Star Wars, into the story of, you know, the Clone Wars and the Jedi and where Ezra and Kanan are going, it's so rewarding to rewatch it. And what I liked in particular is I feel like this specific episode is, this is Ezra's unorthodox trial of the gathering, right? Mm-hmm. This is, you know, Yoda is sort of in a bittersweet way thinking, you know, in a different world, you know, I'd have been patiently waiting outside the cave on Ilum for this young man, you know, to face his demons and find the Kyber that calls to him. He can't have that now, but he needs something. And he's shown strength by getting into this temple this far. So I'm going to quiz him.
Yeah.
I'm going to, you know, give him some options and see what he says, right? See if he has understanding of his fear, right? And that's what's going on in the scene, right? Yeah. We've had some fun guessing about the how, but the why is often what's so important to us. And the why is Yoda questioning Ezra about, why do you want power? What do you think it means to be a Jedi? And Ezra has that moment of understandable anger and fear and desire for revenge because people... the Empire's taken so much from him, and Yoda doesn't tell him that's wrong, but pushes him, right? And and Ezra's able to have that epiphany out loud of, I used to just look out for myself, but that's not how Kanan is. That's not how the rest of everybody, my family is, and what I really want the power for is to defend my family and to help people, because I see what happens when people are helped and are helping. They feel alive, right?
Mm-hmm.
Direct connection to what's discussed blatantly in the Kenobi television series, right? A Jedi's goal is to defend life, not take it. And Ezra passes his trial of the gathering, right? Just like Gungi passed his trial of being impatient, right? And Yoda says, great, you're ready for the next step. You're ready to continue on the path to be a Jedi. So I think that's kind of what's going on in this episode. It's the trial of the gathering for Ezra in a different era.
Absolutely is. Absolutely is. And this idea that, you know, they address, I can't remember the exact quotes, but it's like, yeah, this is, Kaden's like, yeah, this isn't what I would have done. This is different. We're not in the temple, not in the academy, not in the Jedi Order's home base. So yeah, that this would be, which also funny, as even you're describing wonderful stuff. This is a powerful episode. I absolutely implore people to revisit Path of the Jedi. Because it just lays out so much. The Path of Jedi is laid out very clearly and wonderfully and beautifully. And it kind of reminds you of, you know, again, why Luke put down his blade in 83 and all these valuable lessons. But yeah, and it was just fun to revisit the time and not dig into how as much as the why. And it's a good reminder there too.
Yeah. And I think when you chain this episode with a lot of Ezra's path, but specifically when he goes to see Yoda again and Yoda, you know, t- tells him, you know, it's not it's most important how we fight rather than whether we fight or not, but how we fight. And Ezra is obsessed on finding a way to defeat the Sith, and that sends him on this path to Malachor and all this thing. But watching the whole series again, I really agree with Brian's take that Yoda has this bigger picture, right? Yoda's watching everyone, and Yoda has a sense of like, Luke is probably on a path someday to face his father, partially because he'll be strong in the Force, but partially because that's his father. And one day or another, he's probably going to have to face that, right?
Yeah.
And I think he sees that a lot of that stuff with Ezra, when Ezra's kind of obsessed with how do we defeat the Sith, right? I think Yoda's seeing like, well, there's that risk that you're obsessing on killing something, ending something. And it's going to cause you to dance toward the dark side. But also, I think Yoda's seeing this bigger picture of like, you're on this different path. You have this path to be the protector of Lothal, you know, to defend the galaxy from Thrawn, to do who knows what else Ezra is going to do in possibly in the Ahsoka television show. Right.
Right.
I really think that's a big part of the Rebels arc, a big part of Ezra's story. I think Obi-Wan and Yoda are in step on this when Obi-Wan is telling him, you're in the wrong place. This isn't your ending. The Sith isn't your destiny. You know, you have a different destiny. And it's a big deal when Ezra feels the last lesson that Kanan told him is finding the most important place to help and decides for him that's Lothal.
And you're a place to help. Beautiful stuff. I also want to say I started to lose my train of thought a little bit. I apologize. It happens with me. I'm a rambler. All this discussion and hearing you describe this, the personalized gathering, so to speak, reminds me of the Jedi looking at Ahsoka and going, well, it turns out that was your trial. Congratulations, you passed. And her going, not today. Not today. I'm out of here.
Yep. Yep. I do love that about the Jedi, that there are the organized trials, but they are open to, okay, well, hey, Obi-Wan, you defeated Maul in protecting Naboo. Cool, you're Jedi.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is definitely an unorthodox time.
There you go. I don't mean to point fingers at some classic all-star Jedis who came down on Ahsoka there, those arcs there at the end of season 5, but just reminds me of that.
No, that's a beautiful moment and has a moment of comedy of like, oh, when we threw you under the bus, whoops, out of our own fear, it was a trial for you and you passed it.
Guess what? You passed. Okay, F you. I'm out of here.
You know, when I crashed my car into your store, I realized that was me giving you a trial, and you passed. Yeah, very fun stuff. Great question, Brian. Thank you for the opportunity to talk more about Rebels. Very rewarding rewatch. I'm only on 2. I got a lot of rewatches to catch up with Brian. Great question. We're going to move on to our final question from James Pasqualucci. James says, Bright Suns, Force Center. There's something that I've pondered for a long time. As far as we have seen, members of the Jedi Order have a strong enough connection to the Force that they can wield it. However, I wonder, could there ever be a Jedi that cannot wield the Force but still have great faith in it? I remember a quote from Pablo Hidalgo where he said someone with a midichlorian count of 2 could still be a great Jedi. We've seen characters like Lor San Tekka, Maz Kanata, Lyra Erso, and Chirrut Emwe have a feeling and awareness of the Force. They cannot throw rocks around or use mind tricks, but they're seen to be incredible people with incredible faith doing incredible things. As the Jedi Order evolves, should there be members like them who cannot use the Force but have faith in it? After all, that is one of the core principles of a Jedi. There's a lot of places to go with this question, Ken, so I'm just going to throw it to you wide open. Where do you want to start?
Ooh, thank you. I like the technicality here, that it's not just about moving rocks, but why you move them. So someone who understands the why could be able to hold the title of Jedi. You know, I know there is no ranking system or on your business card. I'm a midichlorian 12. Like, there isn't that. But I could definitely see where the Jedi Order along the years could lose sight of this, right? Like, this, there's High Republic energy here, where we, I think, have, you might be able to help me more with the specific examples, but there's some Jedi who struggle to feel the Force in this certain way, or they have individual skills. I think some of the things I absolutely love about the High Republic is each Jedi really, truly feels like themselves. They feel unique. They feel like they bring their own skills to the party. And I'm not necessarily saying that was completely lost. But by the time we meet up in the Jedi in the prequels, I bet there's some Jedi who probably look down on a 12. What are you, midichlorian 12? You don't deserve the title. And to this quote from Pablo, I think it is a lot about the why, about if you understand why we are Jedi, if you understand the path of the Jedi, did you listen or watch to the watch the subtext of that Rebels episode, then you can hold the title. And to me, there'd be a benefit of having a Jedi that is a little bit more in tune with finding the right solution versus overpowering the problem. Which is something that maybe the Jedi can struggle with. You see, Ezra, that's a lot of what you talk about with Ezra in the beginning. I have a problem. I need to overpower the problem with my skills as a Jedi. I have skills. I'm going to be a Jedi because they say I could be a Jedi versus someone going, well, yeah, I don't have a 100-mile-per-hour fastball. So I got to find out how to get the batter out in another way that works for me with my skills and my approach. And that could be a benefit to a Jedi like that.
Yeah. I think that to me, the Jedi are about, you know, the midichlorian count thing to me is it is just about how easily does it come to them, right?
Yeah.
That's the main focus for me of, you know, things come very easily to Anakin. He is very naturally powerful in the Force. He feels it, right? Whereas other students are going to have to like concentrate more to get to his skill level. There's still the question then of how you use those skills. What beliefs do you form and all that? And I really agree with you. I thought about the High Republic as well. It's not exactly what James is asking about. It's not like there are people in there who are like, you're a Jedi in name, but you cannot. Right. You're only vaguely aware of the Force. You feel some vibes, right? But there are Jedi who are like my beloved Reeth Silas, like he's doesn't have as natural of a connection, so he has to struggle. Or Ram Jamran, right? He really sees the Force in a specific way, where he sees the what is organic about mechanical things and the way they all come together. Or I think it's Imri who doesn't feel as skilled in other ways, but is, you know, really, really great on emotion and sending out calming waves or angry waves or reading people. And he's so good at that. It's almost out of control. So he needs to work on that. So I think High Republic has done a great job of just showing that, like, hey, it's not a list of video game powers of, you know, jump high, flip, mind control, push, you know, it's different ways of connecting. And I think that's a little bit what James is getting here with characters like certainly like Maz and Lyra in Chirrut, who all seem like to me what I think of is like Force aware, like they can feel the vibes. But they can't reach in and control it and turn it into a list of physical skills. And I think that's an interesting difference. The other thing that James is talking about before we get into the direct answering of a different Jedi order. When James uses the term faith in the Force, you cannot use the Force, but have faith in it. What does faith in the Force mean to you? How do you think of that?
I think just, you're asking a giant faith question in life in Star Wars that you just can. You believe it, even if you don't understand it. You try to understand it. It is there. It is there with you, even though you don't have every answer about it. You believe.
Sort of believe in something more than just yourself, kind of thing.
Yeah. And kind of accepting that you don't have all the answers and that you don't have all the midichlorians.
I like that idea that if you accept that you have to be in a constant search to understand it better, which a lot of our Jedi are always talking about, that it's kind of not the destination. It's not like, and by the time I'm 35, I will know everything about the Force. But that it is something to always be explored, always be questioned, discovered, understood better, differently, all those things.
Yeah.
I think for me, and this gets into the real, you know, it's the spiritual side of Star Wars. I'm sure for many fans, it will dovetail with, you know, real life religious beliefs. So I always want to have respect. For me, I think of the will of the Force and therefore faith in the Force is sort of faith in others, faith in our grand connection. faith in community, connection, the power of life, the power of nature, the natural cycle of life and death. To me, I think of the will of the Force is this almost intuitive sense between all beings about what is natural, what is best for us. I think it's because that the ideas of the Jedi are about how can we help the most people, you know, and rejecting the sort of selfishness of everything is only from my perspective, but having that sense of we are all connected. What happens to one of us matters to the rest. If we explode that out into a cosmic truth, you know, what is it whispering to us? You know, so that's the way I think of faith in the Force, which is, you know, a casual sub question to bring up.
Right. Just a little one.
Just a little one. Okay. Getting into the rest of James' question. I do want to call out the Church of the Force. James' question is, could there be somebody who can't, you know, manipulate the Force, can't use the Force, be a part of a new Jedi Order? But certainly people who just have faith in the Force, believe in it, study it, right? Mm. We don't know a ton about them, but that is the Church of the Force, right? Here's what the Wikipedia entry says for the behind-the-scenes information about Church of the Force that I thought was really interesting. Through the appearance of Lor San Tekka in The Two and All Villagers, the Church of the Force first appeared in the 2015 film Star Wars The Force Awakens. It was identified as the Church of the Force in the reference book, The Force Awakens Visual Dictionary, which provided some history for San Tekka. Pablo Hidalgo revealed in an interview that the church was originally conceived by George Lucas for Star Wars Underworld, a canned live-action Star Wars TV series. The church's story was put on hold before appearing in Episode 7, The Force Awakens, directed by J.J. Abrams. Since then, Lor San Tekka has popped up in a couple different stories. The San Tekkas have popped up in the High Republic. And in the High Republic, there's been a light bit of Church of the Force storytelling, confirming that it existed a long time ago, and San Tekkas have long been a member of the Church of the Force. So wanted to give that backstory. Ken, what do you think of the Church of the Force?
I love the addition of it to the Star Wars storytelling, and this she's not a member, but just Maz Kanata saying I understand it. I ain't in it. I don't have a lightsaber, but I understand it and how you can be in tune to it. There, I guess it'd be almost the spiritual side of the organized version of the Force, if you will. But anyways, the Church of Force being organized in itself. I don't know. There's something that works for me. And by the way, also, I love that there's often, Saw Gerrera is an example too, often the answer is, well, George had it ready for Underworld, which happens a few times in Star Wars lore. It just, growing up, again, you know, you had the Rebels, Jen Dodonis says, may the Force be with you, and they're talking about the Force, those X-Wing pilots need the Force with them. Just kind of tracks. None of them are Jedi, but people understand it, it's out there, and they believe. So the fact that there is a Church of the Force that's outside the walls of the official Jedi temple has always worked for me, and always in a weird way just been comforting for the galaxy to have that for me.
Yeah, and I'm interested to learn more of their story, but I agree, like I think the kind of the most mature enlightened Jedi I think is like, yeah, we don't own the Force. You know, we are through it, we are granted skills and knowledge, and we try to use those, but it's not ours, you know. The way Luke is, like, it's not a power, it doesn't belong to anybody, you know.
Totally, absolutely, especially if it goes back in time.
Yeah, exactly. So I'd love more storytelling about that. So I've pulled multiple sub questions out of James' question, but maybe we should answer James' question. Mm-hmm. How do you feel, Ken, about the idea of a Jedi Order that is asking people probably to take, like, the Jedi Code, to have these shared overall beliefs about the Force, its purpose, its use, and then, hey, if you can throw rocks, great. If you just get vibes sometimes, if you can't feel the Force at all, everyone's welcome as long as they are kind of take this oath and have this shared view. How do you feel about that?
I like this idea, not just because it could create a Jedi in a service industry, right? I'm the gardener Jedi, and this is what I do. I'm connected to plants, and this is my area of expertise. But it might demystify some of the things around the Order. You know, I'm just going to think if this is a new order, he says, as the Order evolves, but this becomes a rebirth. It would make a more robust order, but again, one that opens up the doors a little bit more. And there, you, to your point of earlier, the Force is about connection and others. That this would not just be these wizard warriors that are off to solve your problems or exert their power into a situation. That it would be truly an organization of the people, so to speak. Not to suddenly sound like I'm campaigning, but that it would, it would open it up and open up the Force. Even though the Force is always there, maybe there's people who just feel like, well, I can't wield a lightsaber, therefore this ain't for me. So maybe this is about opening the doors.
Yeah. I think I'd be really interested in that storytelling. That would be fascinating, right? Maybe Rey forms an order that searches people who connect with the Force in different ways, right? Or want to live a specific kind of lifestyle. And I'm not saying that, you know, Rey recreates the Jedi Order exactly as it was, but right. I think some of those tenets that maybe the Jedi clung to too rigidly in the prequel era, a lot of those tenets are great of like, hey, if I want to make my entire life about service, that's going to be my focus. It has to be my focus. So it's not like I'm going to be a Jedi from 6 to 8 on weekends.
Yeah.
I'm here all the time. I think that's a big part of it, you know?
Yeah. And I'm trying to think a wild random thought, but it's like we learned with like the Grand Inquisitor, a Jedi temple guard who was never allowed to go inside the library, so to speak, right? That mm-hmm. knowledge in there was kept from him, and he let that burn a hole in his soul. Again, a choice he makes, but they deal with that. It's at play in the comics a bit too with Jocasta New. So, you know, does that, I understand, maybe there's a purpose that you can't read that stuff, but that there's these walls inside the order that maybe are potentially dangerous, and something like this could be different where, hey, we're all on the same team here. You just don't wield the blade or move those rocks as good as the others, but you're still here.
Yeah. Yeah. Lots of fun storytelling possibilities. So I'd be very interested in a story exploring that. I also do think the Jedi Order that we know from Star Wars storytelling, I do think I really understand how it can feel sort of like the Jedi are all about community and helping people, but their doors are closed and they say only if you have powers, right? Yeah. I really understand sort of having a conflicted feeling about that, right? But to me, what's interesting about the Jedi Order is it represents a lot of things. And one of the things to me is it is a system to reckon with power. Mm-hmm. I think in the real world, we all have power. In its different kinds of power. I think in the story of Star Wars, everyone has choice, everyone has power, everyone matters. The Jedi who have a strong connection to the Force and can control people's minds, can look into the future, you know, can do amazing physical feats. That's a level of power that comes with it, this extra level of danger, and therefore this extra level of responsibility. Mm-hmm. So I feel like a part of the Jedi Order is looking around and saying, those of us who are connecting to the Force this way have this power, which could be a boon to society. It could benefit others, or we could be selfish with it and we could hurt others. So we need to gather and decide a philosophy about how we use this power. So I think the existence of that level of power is a part of the point of the Jedi Order. In the way that I look at it, I think that's a little bit of what, you know, Filoni's great story about Lucas telling him how a Jedi would negotiate,
yeah.
of putting the lightsaber on the table. It's sort of saying, look, we are the Jedi Order. We are a group of people who want to avoid conflict at all costs, but we have power. And if we see something that we believe is an injustice, we are willing to use that power. So please know that in this conversation, that's where we're coming from. Like, mm-hmm. We don't want to have conflict. How can we all avoid it? But the purpose of the Jedi is, you know, to defend peace and justice. And there's that great quote, I think it's in A Light of the Jedi, about sometimes peace and justice are conflicting things. And I think that's what gets really complex and interesting about the Jedi. Of, on one thing, you don't want to be like, we have power, so we run around the galaxy telling people what to do, right? No good. Mm-hmm. But then people are being victimized, brutalized. You have power and you're not doing anything about it.
Yeah.
Those are the questions of power that the Jedi are constantly wrestling with and trying to find the right path of when to use that power. So I think to me that's why the Jedi Order is this collection of people who have a specific kind of power, wrestling with the best way to use it.
Wrestling with the why, huh? Wrestling with the why. The story, the Star Wars story, wrestling with the why.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry for going on and on about power.
No, no. I think it's very important, relevant conversation.
Yeah. I don't think it's easy answers. And I think that's part of my whole Justice for the Jedi of like, this is not an easy thing that they're trying to do, right?
Oh.
To decide when to raise that blade and when to lower it, when having power is just being a bully and when having power is a responsibility to help others. Is that's hard.
Indeed. Yep.
All right. Any final thoughts on that one, Ken?
No, wonderful question. Wonderful stuff there. And it also reminds me that I want to see more Lor San Tekka.
Yeah, absolutely. Bring us the San Tekkas. And man, I love Lyra's stuff in that Catalyst novel. So more force aware people as well.
Yeah.
And more highlighting power of all kinds in Star Wars, which leads us to our final segment, Power of the Light Side. This is a segment where we ask Patreon patrons to share something joyful about Star Wars. We've got a great one today from Blake Davidson. Are you ready, Ken?
I am ready, sir.
Here's what Blake has to say. Hello, Joseph and Ken. I hope you're both doing well. Smiley face. Today, I'd like to simply celebrate how much Star Wars has been in my life as I've grown up, but also how important it's remained for me. I'll try to keep this as short as possible, but I apologize if this gets too long. It's fun for me to look back on some of those early Star Wars moments. I have memories as a young kid of lazy Saturdays with the original trilogy on VHS and of awful stick figure drawings of Vader and Luke in yellowing notebooks that today I hesitate to get rid of and may always hold on to. As I got older, the prequels released, and I deeply latched onto those. The dramatic, tragic ending of Revenge of the Sith captivated my imagination at a younger age. But that wasn't it. I played so many of the Star Wars video games of that time, with the original Battlefront series and Force Unleashed being my favorites. Many nights were spent within those spaces, and so often my younger days were centered around consuming Star Wars as a whole. Now, as a man in my mid-20s, my relationship with the franchise has changed, but in the most positive ways. Looking at these stories with more mature eyes and with more nuanced perspectives has been wonderful. For example, the Kenobi show specifically left a large impact on me. It had its little flaws, as all Star Wars projects do, but where it worked for me, it really worked. Seeing the faces of Ewan and Hayden again was surreal, especially during the finale episode, and it really tugged at some deeper emotions rooted in nostalgia. I also teach 7th grade English and frequently use Star Wars within lessons. We are currently in a narrative unit, which has already given me several opportunities to discuss its themes and characters when applicable. It's just gratifying to discuss these things with students who are beginning to grow, change, and question the world around them. I think Star Wars is important at this age. I've also grown from stick figure drawings. These days, I do lots of freelance graphic design, specifically creating merchandise for touring artists and bands all over the world. Yet nothing gives me more of a thrill than to sit down and create a Star Wars piece, even if the art is just for me. I guess my point in writing this reflection is that as we grow and as things get more complicated, I think we sometimes expect things from childhood to sort of fade into memory. We get too busy or too focused on life things to care about that sort of stuff. But I'm so thankful that this hasn't been the case for me. In fact, not only has that not been the case, but the things I loved as a kid have morphed into things I can love even more as an adult. So here's to maxing out more heroes in Battlefront 2 2017, sitting down and watching Mando Season 3 soon, and celebrating whatever Star Wars still has left for us. Thank you both for reading this all, and thank you for being such a positive force, pun absolutely intended, in this community. Have a great day. Thank you very much, Ken. What are your thoughts on this Power of the Light Side entry?
A lot of wonderful stuff in here. First of all, I think it's just so cool that you're doing art for bands. I mean, come on. I love that. Love to see a collection of that stuff. I think, here's the first that I have. I think George Lucas would hear this and go, yeah, I didn't create Star Wars for podcasters. I created it for English teachers teaching the kids right at the cusp of there, going out into the real world there. I think you're striking some real chords there about what Star Wars is about and how powerful it is and what is there for us. I recently had an encounter with someone who was like, Star Wars, we all make up what's in there. We all make up what's connected, what we connect to. It's, do we, or is that the purpose of what's going on here? So I love this and just, how Star Wars changes with you. We keep going back to that too. You and I both love Carl Weathers' quote from that Mando behind the scenes stuff of, what Star Wars was saying to me in my 20s, I didn't hear till now, and I probably needed to hear it back then. But that's the point being, Star Wars grows with you as you start to look at it, engage with it in different ways. But always keep your stick figures. Always keep your art from your childhood.
Yeah, I've been unearthing some old photos of my childhood and some drawings, and it is it's a shocking and rewarding as time goes on. Yeah, I agree with a ton of what is being said here, and in particular about, you know, it's a different time, and some things we encounter is kids. Maybe they stay in our childhood, but a lot of things that we love, there's a lot to love from different perspectives of age. I think Star Wars is so important as a coming of age story. All the different parts of Star Wars are different coming of age stories. But, you know, we're lucky now to you and I have grown up with it. And now we're getting to our coming of middle age stories.
Yeah.
With Kenobi. And boy, is that resonant of the it's over. We lost. Mm-hmm. No. Maybe those things you valued when you were younger, maybe they're still important. I'm glad to have those lessons keep coming from Star Wars.
Yeah, indeed.
All right, Ken, where can people find us?
Hey, you can find us on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We're on Hive Social as well as Force Center. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. We're on Instagram, YouTube as well. Thanks for everyone who watched Figure Fights. More on the way. Podcasts available on Acast, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, and more. And merch available at tpublic.com/user/Force Center. And you can go to patreon.com/Force Center to support us directly and get into our Discord to have conversations with Force Center friends like the ones we shared questions from today. You can find me at Ken Napsok. Go to my website, kennapsok.com. You can link to other things I do, like my music show on Mixcloud called Pop Rockin' Radio. Joseph, where can they find you?
Yeah, you can find me on all the social media with the handle Joseph Scrimshaw. I'm looking for more friends on Instagram in particular because, frankly, it's one of the more happy, relaxing social media sites. So trying to spend a little bit more time there. But you can also find me on Twitter, on TikTok, and you can check out my YouTube page. Just search for Joseph Scrimshaw there as well. Got some more stuff coming very soon. But for now, for myself, for Ken, for our Dagobah snack packs, this has been Cues of the Force.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.